My wife and I have a general goal of making sure that each of our children has his will broken by the time he reaches the age of 1 year. From The Correction and Salvation of Children by Ron Williams.
In episode 4 of the documentary on Hepzibah House, we examine the policy of humiliation at Hepzibah House. And we start with Pat Williams, the wife of Ron Williams.
She would exhibit such love, and you did not have love and affection at Hepzibah House, that you craved it. And so if she would exhibit just a tiny, tiny bit towards you, you would eat it up, and you would do anything to have her exhibit it towards you again.
She was the nastiest person that I've ever met in my lifetime. She would come down to yell at girls, to talk about the whole group, how rebellious we were, how our parents had to send us there because, you know, we were so this and that, how horrible we all were. The letters that we were writing home weren't good enough. Everybody there was there because they were whores at home. They were drug abusers at home. They were horrible to their families. She would say whores. Yeah. Yeah. And harlots. That was her other word.
Pat Williams, wife of Ron Williams, has lectured teenage girls there on being called a bitch and how they deserve it if they do anything that displeases men. An enormous percentage of girls who are sent to Hepzibah House have a history of being molested, either at home or at church, and they are blamed for this as a matter of policy. Fathers, grandfathers, and pastors, as the holders of authority, are held blameless in these matters. It is indeed a very typical response in independent fundamental Baptist churches for victims of a sexually predatory pastor to be blamed as the cause for his downfall. That is certainly not rare in fundamentalism, but at Hepzibah House, this mindset is carried out to the last degree without exception.
Most were not sexually active when they went there, but about half of the girls were sent there because they blew the whistle for being abused, molested, somehow sexually abused at home. And then that just goes like hand in hand with, well, we're going to blame you for this because you're taking down this man of God or whatever.
The girls are not able to convey to parents another isolating factor at Hepzibah House. That is, the constant barrage of name-calling, accusation, and berating language used against the girls by the staff. The girls are constantly accused of rebellion and pride if they do anything, deliberately or accidentally, that displeases staff. The girls are constantly criticized and condemned for the quality of their chores, their previous dreams and goals, their physical appearance, anything.
They basically tried to convince all of us that we had been having sex at home.
When I was there, girls just got beat for having an accident.
You were labeled as rebellious or as unsubmissive.
To maintain an appearance of accountability, Williams requires girls to write letters home each week. However, these letters are first reviewed by staff and given back to the girls to rewrite if they contain anything that indicts Hepzibah House or if they sound like the girl is unhappy. The letters are to express gratitude and happiness. A 15-minute phone call may be allowed once a month, but the calls are monitored and are cut off if either party says anything unacceptable. Even visits, which cannot start until a girl has been at Hepzibah House for several months, and which can be denied on any pretext, are allowed only with staff present to monitor what is said. No girl at Hepzibah House that I have spoken to or read about was ever able to get a message to parents about what was really going on. The fear of the Williamses, combined with the constant presence of one of his staff, effectively stops girls from trying to break through the wall of deceit.
We had to write letters to our parents, to our pastors. Our letters were checked before they were sent out. Incoming letters were checked before they were given to us, and we knew that. So my mom never knew about anything that was going on because I wrote lovely letters.
Yet another demeaning and isolating practice at Hepzibah House is the odd policy of rigidly controlling use of the bathroom and destroying privacy. Bathroom times are rigidly controlled, and girls may not use the bathroom except during an approved bathroom break. Girls who cannot contain themselves until the next bathroom break and have accidents are forced to wear a diaper. In addition, all residents must fill out a public chart that records their bowel movements and menstrual cycles. Several of the girls from Hepzibah House have said that, no matter what, they recorded normal bowel movements and menstrual cycles. for several girls have witnessed girls who were honest in recording bowel trouble being held down on the bathroom floor with an enema forced into them.
We got to go to the bathroom when we woke up, on a schedule. Then 10 o'clock, if we were at school, we got a break. And then 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and then not again till 4. Then not again till about 8. We were again on a schedule for that. The problem was that sometimes they would mix up the schedule and they would just skip breaks and change, and you just had to hold it. Or if we're working in the garden, they didn't take us for bathroom breaks more than every 4 hours. And then it was everybody at once. We all had to go together, and staff would stand outside and we'd wait our turn one at a time. My greatest fear at Hepzibah House was that I would wet myself, and I was completely, you know, that was unspeakable that a 15-year-old would be that afraid of that.
This statement is from a former resident at Hepzibah House, Amy. I wet my bed at Hepzibah House only one time, and the mental and physical fallout from the staff response has followed me throughout my life. I had never wet my bed before Hepzibah House, and I have never done it since. One night in my sleep, I dreamed I was trying to hold my bladder until the bathroom break. We were all lined up outside the restrooms, and though girls kept coming out, the line never moved. In my dream, I was hurting badly in my stomach and back because I had to go so bad. And in my dream, I made it in time to the restroom. Unfortunately, in real life, I wet the bed instead. I was soaked through and through, and so I wrapped my blanket around me and tiptoed over to Sharon's sailor, whose bunk was next to mine. I didn't want to draw attention to myself because I was mortified. I said her name several times before she woke up, and then I whispered to her what I'd done, but she couldn't hear me, so I repeated myself a little louder. "I wet my bed, Miss Sailor." She looked surprised at first and then disgusted, and then she frowned and said, "Yes, you did. Do you know how I know that you did?" I shook my head no. I was terrified at this point and so didn't speak. She replied, "Because I can smell it, and soon everyone in the dorm will be forced to smell it as well." Sharon told me I was filthy and needed to clean myself up. I nodded and started for the bathroom when she whispered my name loudly and told me to drop the blanket on my bed and strip everything off the mattress and go put it in the washer, but not to start it yet. I nodded again, to which Arnett Bronson said loudly from just behind me, "You were too lazy to get up and ask to go to the bathroom, and now you're too lazy to speak?" Her voice carried, slowly waking up the other girls and Jenny Hoke. She pointed down at the bed. "Strip the bed, Amy." She slowed her speech down and enunciated each word. Jenny Hoke shoved a few towels into my chest and literally shouted at me to wash the floor as I went into the bathroom. Jenny pushed me on my shoulder down to my knees, telling me that I was filthy and lazy. She said I needed to crawl on the floor backwards while scrubbing with a towel before me so I didn't miss anything. I did this all the way into the shower with staff following along with me. I could barely see anything because I was crying so hard, and I kept looking behind me so I wouldn't run into anything, but I couldn't see. Every time I bumped into something, one of the staff would make a comment about how nasty or lazy or filthy I was. When I made it to the shower, one of the staff reached in and turned the water on. There were, I believe, 5 or 6 showers, but only one with a tub. Jenny stopped up the tub and told me to strip everything off and soak it in the tub as I showered. I climbed into the tub as I stripped and tried to scrub all of me and wash my hair before Sharon's pocket timer went off. I was afraid of not finishing my shower in time. Sharon threw my uniform over the stall at me. I was getting dressed when I noticed I had no underwear. Sharon threw a diaper over the stall at me, a Depends, so I wore a diaper. 3 times that day my diaper was changed. I had to take it off and then show it to a member of staff before throwing it away. Then I would tape another Depends onto myself all over again. The 3rd time I did this, Jenny was the staff who went with me, and she told me that if I wasn't so lazy and slow all the time, maybe those diapers would actually fit. I never wet the bed again. I still dream about it sometimes, that I have had an accident and will wake up so scared and frightened, madly feeling about me to see if I have had another accident. Then I wake up and I'm me, an adult, and they can't do anything to me anymore, even if I did wet my bed. Girls at Hepzibah House cannot communicate with each other freely. They are not allowed to discuss where they've come from or anything in what they call past life. Girls who are new to Hepzibah House are shadowed by staff and sometimes by senior students, watch to make sure that they do not speak to the other girls until they are permitted to do so. No conversations are private. Girls who try to speak to each other without staff present are punished if they are caught. Girls who resist the system at Hepzibah House, particularly those who ask the questions that Ron and Patty Williams cannot answer, are put on silence. They are simply not allowed to speak for weeks or even months at a time. At least one remarkable girl was silenced for a year. One of the most bizarre, barbaric, and pointless exercises in breaking a girl's will at Hepzibah House is the forced vaginal examinations that several girls have been subjected to endure. These were forced upon the girls, teenagers, and virgins with no explanation, no preparation, and no respect for the girls' dignity.
I was called out of school, was not told where I was going. Naomi Williams and Debbie Drazich ushered me into the dorm and had me wait there. And a man with white hair came out of the room we called a closet and said, "I'm ready." I went in. I had a pelvic exam by a man who never introduced himself, never told me what he was going to be doing. I remember he lifted up my skirt and I was 15 and a man I didn't know was lifting up my skirt. I felt like I was being violated, and I had been violated in the past, so I was reliving more memories than I understood at the time. It was a very painful process. I have had exams since then, and I've never had one that was so painful. I also had blood drawn, and I told Debbie Drazich that I fainted when I had my blood drawn, and she ignored me. After I had fainted, I was told that I was being disobedient, disrespectful, rebellious, something along those lines. I asked to take a shower afterwards. I was told no. I went back to school and I remember crying at my desk.
I was taken into, basically it's a large closet. We called it the dresser room. It had two closets and just dressers. That was it. I went in there. Jenny Hoke, who was our school nurse, was in there. And then there was a man in there. There was some sort of a table. I honestly can't recall if it was an actual exam table with stirrups. I don't recall, but it was some sort of table. I had to sit on the table, and I don't remember this guy talking to me. Nothing was told to me. I don't know who he was. He wasn't introduced. They didn't say what they were doing. I had to lay down, and I mean, now it was obvious that they were going to do a vaginal exam, and I wasn't put in a gown or anything, but my dress, you know, I had my knees like clenched together, and I don't know if I physically was saying like, no, but I mean, I know I was crying. I was like, my hands were just like balled up, like my nails were digging in, you know? And I was fighting them even if I didn't say no. It was obvious, like I didn't want that to happen. And they pulled my dress up, they took my underwear off, and then they did, you know, based on what I know now, I'm assuming it was just a pap smear. I don't recall what was happening at the time. And when it was done, that was it. There was no explanation for anything. Put my clothes back on, and then I was taken over to go to school with the rest of the girls. I was 17. I'd never had anything like that done before.
I was taken by Sharon Saylor, who was staff at the time, drove me to a doctor's office. They put me on a table and my feet in stirrups and gave me a pelvic exam, and I'd never had one in my life. It was at a doctor's office. It was not one of those closet exams that I've heard about. It was right before I graduated. It made no sense whatsoever. To me, I felt like I was raped by the doctor. I was silenced at that time. I wasn't allowed to ask questions. I wasn't allowed to speak in any way, shape, or form. All I was told was to get in the car. I was told was to get out of the car. I was told to lay on the table and put my feet in the stirrups. Nothing was explained to me. This strange man stuck a piece of metal inside me, screwed it open, probed me, swabbed me, poked around in my breasts. I was told to get dressed, and I was taken back.
I will say unto God my rock, why hast thou forgotten me? Why go I mourning because of the oppression of the enemy? As with a sword in my bones, mine enemies reproach me, while they say daily unto me, where is thy God?
The Lambs of Hepzibah House is produced by Jerry Massey.